No.
I think this would be a perfect time for that laugh track.
Awkward.
It's the best kind of laugh for us, I really think. For real.
Welcome, Plotters. My name is Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid, and you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
So who do we blame this time?
This is totally my fault.
Yes.
But in probably the most amazing way.
Really, truly, please. Okay, so none of us know anything about this movie until you came onto the scene, so you get to explain it.
Okay, the movie's name is Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone. Did I get that right?
Correct.
So this movie has just been released at the time of listening, not the time of recording. It hasn't. We got to see a preview. This was the first time that we got to like see a movie.
A screener?
Before
Are we like freaking Rockefellers or something?
I think so.
I think we're professionals now because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been a professional since we had an official Patreon. So like this is just the next level.
So the story behind why we're reviewing Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone is that my HR representative at Podchaser, Matt, he also does review movies. He has a blog and he's also on a couple of different boards, I believe. And so he gets emails for requests to view and discuss his movie and possibly promote it. And he forwarded an email along from Charlie Clark's representation. I don't really know. So Charlie Clark is the creator, co-writer, and producer, and some other credits probably on there. And so there was some representation that was forwarded to Matt, and then Matt forwarded it along to me, and then we reached out to their representative PR person, and they said, heck yes, we would like to. That's not a direct quote, but yes, that's how we like to say yes. We got the yes on it. So this is the first time that we're sort of reviewing a movie that we're also going to have an interview with a creator.
Is that bonus content, Jen, or are we going to release it as a part of this episode?
I think that based on the amount of time and the amount of weeks that we have available in July, we'll probably still have 3 episodes, and at the end of July, we will have basically a 30-minute interview with Charlie Clark.
3 parts and then a 4th bonus part.
Yeah, sort of what we've done with Lucas and Abraham in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, it's someone that has actually worked on the film. So that's, number one, awesome. And number two, something that I'm like terrified of.
I think there's a healthy amount of terror when you engage with something new.
Mm-hmm.
Let's like, yeah, I mean, there's the monkey brain that says jump into the void. And I think that stepping into what makes you uncomfortable gives you an opportunity to tell your whole nervous system that this will not kill you.
True. All right. And also, if we need to take a break, let's decide that, and then I'll be able to pause, and then we don't have to worry about having this all the figuring out where the cuts are and stuff.
Wonderful.
Jen has a fancy new machine, and let's see how this affects the podcast.
Nice.
You want to give the stats of your new machine? Jen, do it. Tell me about your fancy new machine.
Oh, this is the Rode Podcaster Pro. It's the first model. I think they're releasing a second model this month, and we got it slightly used. It had only been used about 10 times on eBay. And the Rodecaster Pro has lots of, it's been used in lots of different podcasts, and it is sort of a favorite among podcasters. And I'm a personal fan of Rode. They do a lot of really great, they do have a lot of great microphones. This, we have not changed our microphones out at this point. We just have a different recording system, and it replaces a USB interface as well as an iPad and quite a bit of things that were attached to those that we needed, like headphone preamp and that sort of thing. And it's also got a pad for sound effects and stuff. So
why don't you press a few buttons that you really, really, really want to press?
All right. Well, this is our show is Shocked and Applauded. So and that just goes on like for a little while. And then I think this is probably one that I hear the most in my head. Also,
so that's the sound for Shocked. It's wah wah. Yeah. I think it would waffle between the last two.
Yeah. But also, I can plug it into the computer and load up any sound effects that I want.
Nice.
Fancy, fancy, Miss McQuaid.
So we could just do our own sound bites and constantly reference ourselves.
And I think we should.
Yeah. I mean, for a hobby podcast.
Let's hokey it up. Let's do it.
Or if we wanted to start adding in, you know, other podcasts, ads, their own intros and stuff, we can just load those in. Then we don't have to worry about fixing all that and putting it in post.
Having it being one of those, what did you call it when you just, when it floats in, like you said that when we add the first, our intro, that's like, we're part of the Prolic Podcast Network.
Yeah, dynamic audio insertion.
Yeah. So instead of dynamic audio insertion, we are just pushing a button.
Yeah.
That's so fun. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fun. I applauders, if you can come up with a Sean Fax noise, we will super duper do something to appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because right now it's like Sean Fax.
Sean Fax.
Yeah.
Which is still pretty nice.
I love Sean, but I wish he had a button we could push for him. Could you imagine if he came in and he was like,
Sean Fax.
I don't know. I wish you guys could hear his voice. If you haven't and you want to hear Sean's voice, listen to our Shock Talk episodes, because Sean is amazing and his wife Madeline also amazing. That's all I have to say about that, but it's so good.
Agreed. All right. So I think we can all come to the assumption that we all were introduced to this movie in the same way, which is
you.
Me. Bringing it in. So that makes me think that, especially with our discussion of Sean, that we should just jump into Sean Facts.
Sean Facts.
Sean
Facts. God, there's got to be a better soundbite for that, but I don't know what to do.
Sean Facts.
Yeah, I was going to push a button, but I don't think.
No. I like Lydia's. Make that the thing.
Okay. Well,
Sean Facts. No, I can't do it. Lydia, do it again.
Sean Facts.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. And I'll just cut that out later and we'll put that in.
Okay.
Great. So the budget for this movie, I don't know where Sean found this. I was looking all over for it, but the budget is listed as about $3.7 million.
So much money.
That's a lot of money for an independent film. Mm-hmm. Like this.
Mm.
And it was limited release. So sort of the same news that we had with Mirror Mask. It's difficult to really determine the success of this movie. I think we're going to find out much more as it's released this month, or last month, the 28th of June. The domestic box office when it was released limited was $113,687. So it's got some money to make up, but I think it'll get there, especially with our help, right? The Shocked and Applaud bump. That's a thing, right? No?
I think this would be a perfect time for that laugh track.
Awkward.
It's the best kind of laugh for us, I really think. For real.
All right, so I'm going to begin first with a little bio of Charlie Clark that I got from his sort of official website.
So he's writer, producer, and star of this film.
Correct, and a creator as well.
Yes.
So I'll start with that. And then Sean has a little bit of additional information that wasn't available directly off of Charlie's website. So bear with me. It's about 4 or 5 paragraphs here for us to get through, but I think it's really important to know how this movie got started, and you'll find out some of that within this. So here we go. Charlie was born with the auto industry in his blood, stemming from his great-grandfather, who actually purchased his very first car dealership back in 1933. For this reason, Charlie's parents were very involved in the car business and would also have to often at times travel through the world, many times for business and others for pleasure, leaving Charlie to the care of his Nana. It was inevitable that as the years went by that Charlie would become strongly attached to his Nana, and so would she. Although Mrs. Aguirre, I'm gonna slaughter some names here.
Just think Christina Aguilera. Aguirre.
Yeah. A-G-U-I-R-R-E was married to her husband, Amado, and had a daughter of their own. She would eventually love Charlie to the point where she would see him as her own son and he as a mother. With the same commitment to the Latino community and the same story to tell of Charlie and his Nana, Charlie Clark quickly planted himself in the hearts of El Pasoans and began to see tremendous growth as his presence gained traction in the market. This growth and warm acceptance by the El Paso and surrounding New Mexico region led Charlie Clark, Nissan El Paso, that's Nissan El Paso, sorry, to achieve a huge accomplishment in November 2019, becoming the number one Nissan dealership in volume sales in the entire U.S.
That's so fancy.
It is.
It really is kind of fancy. For us, like, that's top tier fancy.
Yeah. I mean, even if he wasn't doing a movie, if we had like an interview with somebody that had that much success, that would be pretty amazing. So unknowingly of what Charlie's marketing campaigns would one day bring to him, he would one day receive a call from Hollywood expressing interest in producing a movie with him. This interest stemmed from the success that Charlie had in the Rio Grande Valley in the early 2000s, more specifically a 30-minute show that would air weekly called Orale Charlie. The show initially featured stories of Charlie and his Nana, in which together would share experiences about Charlie as a kid, and even once aired a trip they both took to Nana's hometown in Mexico. After a few seasons, Charlie revamped the show and incorporated the Green Ghost and the Mexican. Sean found this spelled differently than is on the website. So the way that it's spelled on the bio website is M-E-X-I-C-A-N, and Sean found it spelled as M-E-X-S-I-C-A-N. So there's an extra S in there in the one that Sean found.
Mm-hmm.
This was a serial which used humor to address issues affecting the Latino community, such as crime, immigration, and diabetes. In the show, Charlie's Green Ghost character had a sidekick, Mexican, whom was portly and wore a red bodysuit and had a penchant for banana cream pie. The Mexican in this movie is a lot different. I think he's very attractive. Together with the powers bestowed upon...
Hold on a second. Jen.
What?
Do you?
I do.
God bless. Okay, go on.
Together with the powers bestowed upon by Mrs. Aguirre. Okay, sorry. I'm very, very sorry.
I forgive your white person tongue. It's like rolling R's is so hard. And I'm asking for forgiveness for you because like... It's hard.
Yeah.
Okay. Go on. And we are respective.
Totally.
Not respective, but respectful.
As a person, as a show. She would set sail to conquer evil. In one episode, they rescued illegal immigrants held hostage by smugglers who brought them across the border. Pretty serious content there. The call received from Hollywood expressed interest in turning this once local-only show into a Hollywood movie, for which an agreement was reached and production kicked off. The movie includes a variety of popular movie stars, such as Danny Trejo.
Woo! Yes. I love you, Danny. You'll hear about it a lot.
Yes.
I'm going to say Kuno Becker, K-U-N-O, WWE wrestler Bobby Lashley, professional mixed martial arts fighter Cain Velasquez, and Renee, I think that's Renee, but it might be Renee. It's two E's at the end.
Mm.
Victor, she's the voice of Abuelita in Disney Pixar's film Coco. That's the grandma.
Wait. So the Nana is Abuelita?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fancy. Yeah. That's so many. That's so many degrees. We were getting so many degrees from this film, but like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Totally. And of course, Charlie himself. The movie is scheduled or was scheduled to be released in 2020. That was the limited release and was written by Charlie Clark and directed by Michael D. Olmos, son of actor Edward James Olmos and David Rodriguez, brother of famous filmmaker Robert Rodriguez.
Wow, this is so fancy. And also, like, so this had a limited release during COVID. Yeah. So it was like, hey, guess when my movie's coming out? And then it's pandemic. So, like, I can understand why their numbers were so low.
Yeah.
But I feel like it could, like, grapple hard.
Oh yeah, this could definitely turn into a cult classic.
Absolutely.
And so we're here to present to you so many spoilers.
So many
spoilers.
In the hopes really that there's excitement when you hear about some of the things that we discuss here and that you would go and find it online. I'm not sure which streaming service it will be out in, but after we have the interview with Charlie, which will be our next week, I will hopefully be able to post that within the first episodes or first parts release.
Oh, you're gonna send it out betwixt our parts of this episode?
No, we'll record the interview next week.
Uh-huh.
And then for the part one release,
mm-hmm.
or I'll be able to say what we learned from the interview.
Yeah, okay, cool. Ta-da-da-da-da-da-da.
So it was written by Charlie and directed by Michael D. Olmos, I said. That's, I believe, just trying to understand the relationship. I think it's a nephew of Robert Rodriguez. And here's some additional info from Sean. It was pretty much a one-man bilingual production, the Green Ghost and the Mexican show. And during its first years, it was only aired on XHAB, a Televia affiliate station across the river in Matamoros, Mexico, but was able to be viewed in the U.S. on the station's cable channel. In 2005, the Wall Street Journal did a story on Clark Gringo and Nanny court Hispanic market with car pitch.
It feels like I'm at a flea market with Granny being, not Nanny, and then like Gringo is behind her, and I'm like, I think I might buy that carpet over there. And Nanny's like, no. And then Gringo's like, it could be a good deal. Is it like a flea market expedition?
It almost makes it sound like the show is more to sell cars. And it feels like the show was really to try and talk about issues affecting Mexican people.
Well, so I should, I apologize. I didn't really separate these paragraphs very well. So the Wall Street Journal story isn't related to the show.
Oh, okay.
It's a piece that they did on Charlie and his Nana with basically about his car salesman history. So there's a lot of success. If you check this guy out on the web, just search for Charlie Clark Nissan and you'll find it. And there's a lot more information about how he grew his business, how he included his Nana in his promotional material. And so they have this really, really great kinship relationship together. Very, very tight, very close. And at the end of the credits for the movie, there's like tons of pictures of them together. One of them is her 99th birthday, I think it said.
Yeah, I want her to still be alive. And that's probably going to be a question I ask for our bonus content with Dude. Because I love her and I want to meet her.
What if we asked him to like three-way with us? No, four, five-way with us?
That just sounds so...
Not in a sexy way, Jen, but if like they could hold up an iPad to her and be like, hey, is this your grandson? And she's like, super, yeah, that's my grandson. I'll be like, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Though it would be just amazing to be able to speak with him.
I like this guy, but I want to meet his grandma.
I mean, she must have been an amazing woman that he created this entire like show and put her into the promotional material. There's a lot of Latino people who are working on this film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I really think that there's probably more people who are Latino working on the film or, you know, casting in the film than there are white people. And I think that says something.
I like that a lot. It makes up for some misgivings.
Questionable choices in the storytelling.
But like, also, we're not going to be mad at this movie. I personally am not mad at this movie. And I know our name is Shocked and Applaud, but I am more applaud than shocked. And I say that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. David R. Rodriguez reached out to his brother Robert, whose band Shingen? Shingen?
Say it again. Say it with spelling.
Shingon.
Nope, I can't say that.
Shingen? No, Shingen?
It's got to be Shingen.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll ask Adam. Is featured on the soundtrack. So one track in particular, which is not available online and can only be heard during the film, is Shingen's cover of Survivor's Eye of the Tiger en Español.
I super thought I could find this on Spotify. I was super excited to find it on Spotify, but you're saying I can't?
You cannot.
Jen.
At least, I mean, the actual soundtrack, I believe, is still forthcoming.
Jen, I want to listen to the song.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm like driving on the street and I follow up behind, like, we live in a suburban neighborhood. So every once in a while, you'll come upon people who are running for high school. And every time I want to be like playing Eye of the Tiger next to them, but I feel like it's cliche and stupid. But if I pulled up and played the Hispanic version of Eye of the Tiger, it would be amazing.
It's better than Weird Al's Rye or the Kaiser. Yeah.
They wouldn't get it, but they would probably get it in Spanish. Okay, let's go.
So I think we should not watch the movie, but it's just putting words in my mouth. We need to discuss this movie.
Yeah, but we always start at, okay. Hey, guys. Hey, applauders.
If you're new to Shocked and Applaud, let Naomi explain how we dissect this movie.
Look, it's a play-by-play. It ain't great, but it's if you were at a party and someone was like, have you heard of this movie? And you're like, no. And then we're like, okay, wait, here's how it happens. And then we, with a stupid amount of knowledge, walk you through this movie unapologetically because, hey, you were like, I'm never going to watch Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone.
I mean, why though?
Okay, but like you might get there, but we're going to tell you everything we saw tip to tail. Let's go.
Ghost. Green Ghost.
Sorry, did you say Gringo?
Green Ghost.
No, no, it's Green Go. Green. No, I'm sorry. No, wait, not Green Go.
It's Green Ghost. Green Ghost.
Yeah, it's a bad joke.
I didn't understand it the first time that I watched the trailer, and then I got into the movie, and I'm like,
Yeah, it makes you a little mad, right? Like, not like on a scale of 1 to 10, you're only like a 2.5, but it's like...
you're on the scale. So should we start with the opening quote?
I would love to. I did not write it down.
That's why I'm here.
Because my first note is, who is... Okay, applauders, look. I took my notes on Notes on Apple, and it auto-corrected a whole bunch of stuff, and I did not necessarily correct it, so I might share with you the actual translation it gave me. It says right now, who is Coffee Nifgard PhD?
It's a Cliff Norgard, because there's two ways. PhD.
Scandahoovian.
Scandahoovian.
Oh,
sounds
no.
Scandahoovian. So this is what the quote says. I started questioning the collective beliefs of society and found that my reality was limited by my education. And my education was limited by the beliefs of my educators. I'm not sure what this has to do with the movie.
Okay, so I Googled him and found nothing. But then, as I stared into the void of the credits that followed, I was like, did they seriously quote an executive producer? on the front of the credits? Like,
those are the opening credits, but the opening credits come after the first scene.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like quote and then opening credits, which is like a super classic Marvel maybe-ish thing.
I guess in some cases, like there was an opening quote in our last movie, Baby. I guess it's supposed to offer some pretense, like, oh, there's a theme to this. But honestly, like, it seems like questioning my beliefs of society. And I found that I was limited by my education and my educators were limited by their beliefs. And it's like, it sounds poetic, but I'm not sure what that has to do with the movie.
Here's the thing. Just because it sounds smart doesn't mean it is smart.
And maybe there is reasoning behind that and I'm just not seeing it.
There is training in this movie. There's quite a bit of training in montage form.
Okay, I'm dumb. Say it again.
I started questioning the collective beliefs of society and found that my reality was limited by my education. And my education was limited by the beliefs of my educators.
I don't necessarily see how that tracks, but I'm not mad at it.
Well, so on top of being an executive producer, Cliff, what's his last name?
Cliff Norgaard. Two A's.
Cliff Norgaard. He's also got some kind of psychology degree.
He's a PhD.
Yeah, he's a PhD, and he's got a black belt and quite a long history of martial arts on his resume. So. Even if the quote maybe might not necessarily be a direct fit with the movie, someone might see that and recognize his name and say, oh, I know why they put that in, because it's Cliff.
Well, and there's a possibility the creators of the movie were like, yeah, we totally know this guy. Like, if he has a black belt, then there's a possibility that he did some teaching. And so maybe Charlie Clark would call him master. And so that's where the quote is coming in and how he's like saying, hey, this is where I got my training from. So
my only issue is that it's a cited thing, but there was no way to find it. Like, I Googled it and I was like, huh? I didn't find anything. That's fine. But oh my gosh. Here's the thing. I'm going to talk to the director. Nope, not. I'm going to talk to the writer and the star and the executive producer later. And
so, like, our opinions could very easily change.
It could be swayed when we talk to someone who is part of the art. So in the same way that I love The Starry Night, but it's a beautiful filigreed mash of like the expanse of the universe, and I love to look at it, but to know the experience of creating it, I might change my opinion. And that might be a very grand thing to say, but also I would love to know how our writer, star, and executive producer/producer experienced that, like that quote, what it meant to him. But also it's our first screen. So like, let's go into it because there's so much to cover so fast. And we as applauders, as you know, when we go through an action film, we can't play by play. Blow by blow, because it's very hard to say.
It's really hard to describe action scenes. And really, like, we're talking about a visual medium. So it's better for you when it comes out on streaming. Check it out, because these are some really good action scenes when we get to them.
Like, they're really great hand-to-hand combats. If I back in the day was a huge Jackie Chan fan. And while there isn't necessarily, there's a little bit, but there the comedy. Mm-hmm. Inside of these really great hand-to-hand combat moments is pretty good. I'd give it an 8.8.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, so let's go from that quote to Mexico, but I don't know where in Mexico.
It's near Teotihuacan. Oh, I feel like I'm going to butcher this.
Yeah, do it.
Teotihuacan.
That's a pretty good for a Caucasian tongue to say.
Teotihuacan. Sorry. But it's near Teotihuacan. Mexico, we see some people coming into this ancient pyramid.
Okay, the first thing I noticed is that the costuming is really good.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire film, let's not negate this, because I probably will not bring it up again, but Evil Auntie, as you will come to know her, has a beautiful, like, very streamlined, not streamlined, that's wrong. She has a very, like, leave all of that in, but, like, her outfit is nearly avant-garde. The cut on it is just exquisite. It shows her shape, but also it's, like, angular and severe in a way that portrays her character very well.
Agreed.
And then everyone else is like either like spooky, scary guy or like your average Indiana Jones explorer guy.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's good.
Graphic credits.
Did we skip that?
No, we didn't.
Oh, is that after?
That's after this scene where the lady comes in with the explorer she's looking at this altar. Mm-hmm. It looks like an altar, but later on with some of the explanation made me think like, It was like a tomb.
We thought it was the tomb.
Right. And like the way that she's like, she like is looking down at it.
I've missed you.
Right. It's almost like she's talking to like someone that's going to be resurrected.
But that's not the fucking case. No. She like caresses the tomb and is like, I missed you. And we're like, is she still in there? Who the fuck are you?
Right. And then the explorer guy kind of looks at her like the main explorer guy is like, yeah, and he's talking about all these great things and how very powerful people have not even made it to here. And I think at one point someone says that it's a Stargate, which makes me think of like 1990s Stargate show.
Yes.
But that's not what they're talking about.
Okay, but then dude says like, I want to be paid $350,000 American. And the son goes, he says he wants to be paid. And she's like, oh. And then she goes, here's the thing for me. I mean, put this wherever you need to. She puts both of her hands on his face. And I don't like to be touched on my face, especially. You know what I'm saying? So the fact is she's like $350,000. And she goes to touch his face. I'm like, no. And then she does it. And then she sucks his life force out in a way that is, I would assume, is very Indiana Jones. But I will tell you, Lydia, I've never watched Indiana Jones.
They definitely don't do that in the three Indiana Jones movies that there are. The three Indiana Jones movies that there are.
Because there was never a fourth one.
There was. Well, of course, we're still waiting probably on that for quite some time and would never have aliens involved.
Or surviving a nuclear blast in a refrigerator.
Exactly. And the way that people die in Indiana Jones movies is either they're in a chase scene and they fall off and they scream of their vehicle, or their heart is pulled out from their rib cage. But if you don't have the effects budget or the practical effects people to do a heart thing, then being able to add some life force glowy stuff onto a face and then, you know, suck it out. Also, I guess like heart from the rib cage, and then also Nazi guy at the end of art.
No one in this film has their face melted off.
No.
I call this scene is face sucking red death.
Right. Because basically she kisses him, he glows red, and then falls over.
And now we enter the Marvel level intro. Have you ever seen like such a, okay. And I don't mean to like harp in when we go in our actual interview with the guy, but like, how much money did they spend on CGI? Because at least a third, if not half of it, had to have been on this intro.
I would agree with that, because the intro is pretty much like, if I don't know of where the inspiration came from, it definitely feels like it's a love letter to action films and martial arts films. The only one I've really seen is Kung Fu Hustle. And that movie has a similar intro where it's like going through, it looks like it's going through these caverns or this canyon, and you have all these names pop up. But then when it pans out, it's actually the title of the movie.
Very Marvel.
Yes. I'm trying to think of a specific thing.
Happens in Harry Potter.
Doesn't.
I think so. I could be wrong.
But yeah, there's special effects budget, not just for the intro, but there's like a little bit of an origin story to
They have a couple of scenes about the origin of, or like the backstory, but then you also have like all of the magical blasts of light that come out. And then you also have this moment where the bad guy is like communicating with an oracle. Mm-hmm. So, I would be surprised if the majority of the budget did not go to CGI.
Agreed. But hey, applauders, let's go to the alarm clock wake up trope. You have to admit it's a whole trope, right?
Right.
We do a drone shot. We impress a girl running. And that was pretty funny.
It's a whole montage about the main character. Montage number one. This is Charlie. He's the main character. And he gets up for the day. He gets his shoes on. He's got he chooses from more shoes than I have.
And the boots on the back wall. Come on now. Yeah. Is that his actual closet?
Is it his actual closet?
I mean, it's something we can ask.
Oh, yeah. Somebody make a note. Okay.
So this is morning routine. He goes for a run.
Tries to impress a girl in the slow-mo. And I thought, oh, is she a constant character? No, she's just boobs.
Yeah. And then when he fails epically, one of the neighbors is watching and he laughs at him.
I want so much more of his neighbors.
Because one of them is like a cowboy who comes out in his underwear and bathrobe, and the bathrobe isn't even tied. Oh, he comes out with a cowboy hat too.
Yeah, he does.
That had to be based on someone.
Yeah,
that's the person that he knows.
Yeah, totally not hired,
right?
It's like, hey Bill, will you come out and be like, "Ur!" And the other guy's like, you didn't score with that chick. Nar, nar, nar.
Yeah. And then he makes himself a smoothie, goes about his day.
I like that he hates his smoothie, but then he goes out to his car and then he f-ing hates that smoothie. Sorry, if I laugh obscurely, it's because Jen has a new system that bleeps me if she pushes a button. If I know I'm speaking and then I watch her push the button, I giggle a little to myself and it fucks everything up. I'll eventually learn to ignore it, but
I will
so new.
I will be editing all of those laughs out, by the way.
Okay, do it. Okay, so I want all of the neighbors, more, more, more.
Right.
But then he gets to his car.
And there's bird poop on the car.
It happens to everybody.
Yeah. So how do you clean bird poop off your car?
I ignore it and go to the car wash 4 weeks later.
But he doesn't do that. Instead, he tries to scrape it off. And then he goes to the extreme, which is licking his fingers and smudging it off with his fingers.
Okay, I will say that he licks the inside of his sports jacket and tries to wipe it off. And then he licks his fingers and tries to. You don't see fingers to poop to mouth. Because you never, as you know, and get ready, Jen, you never go ass to mouth.
It's a burgle cut moment for me, which is a deep cut to Willow.
What's the burgle cut?
It's a deep burgle cut.
What is the burgle cut?
Burgle cut was the mayor from Willow's village.
Okay.
And he was the one who kept getting pooed. He got pooed on by a bird.
Yeah, hilarious.
Twice. Yeah. So, I mean,
that's it. It was a constant thing. It's just a reference to our Willow episode.
Our Willow episode is really good, though.
No, I'm not mad about it, but I just thought it was an actual trope. But it's not a trope. It's just a bird poops is funny.
It's a shocked and applaud reference, an S&AR.
All right. So Charlie owns a car dealership where it seems like he's in film, he owns the car dealership, or at least he's general manager of it.
Yeah, right. But here's the thing. We don't go to the car dealership.
Yeah, I know. He has a way
washes.
Of. Yeah.
We go to a car seminar.
It's an awards show.
Yeah, I fucking hate seminars or award shows that are very niche in a thing. I remember, and you can bleep all of this out, but I remember going to Mary Kay things when people thought that I was good at selling Mary Kay. I am not. I'm just enthusiastic about products that work. And there are some Mary Kay products that are very good, but I am not an MLM advocate. So you go to these shows and they feel like youth group seminars, you know what I'm saying? And they're like, oh, who's fancy right now? And you just get tired because you're it's the same. Jen, get ready to bleep me. It's the same fucking thing every time. The person who overachieved got a point. Great. But you get so tired because no matter how hard you work, it's the people who have so many other things going for them that makes them succeed at the thing. You know what I'm saying? These guys. And I see why he's so tired because he gets a text. And as he responds to the text, he's like, oh, I got to leave the seminar. Right. But he gets stopped by awkward fellow dealers. And I love them because have you ever been stopped by someone more awkward than you? They're like, oh, I want to talk to you. And you're like, oh, no, I'm awkward and I have to go. And they're like, no, we're more awkward than you. And then you have to kind of like dig in with them. But then one of the things that I love about this scene is that the guy who is receiving the award looks over to him and is just like, ugh, I can't believe this guy is interrupting me getting my award. Right. And I would give $100 to find out if it really did him up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, like the guy getting the award.
He's so irritated, but I want to know just how much it messed with him.
Like not in movie?
No, in movie, but like the sequel. Like if we get a sequel and God bless it, can we get a sequel?
I don't make those decisions.
So you want to see this guy come back and he kind of like ribbed Charlie for like, you know, being annoying during his award.
Yeah.
I mean, he got this award 5 times, so I think he should be okay about it, but I don't know. Like, I think the biggest takeaway from the scene is when Charlie's leaving and he gets stopped by the fellow awards guys or the fellow car dealership guys, you know, they're stopping him as he's trying to get out. And as soon as he leaves, they kind of like, they kind of say something that's insulting. I don't remember exactly what they say, but you can see that they're kind of belittling him. But then when he walks away, he insults them, but he insults them in Spanish. I'm not sure. Without subtitles, it was hard to really figure out what he was saying.
I mean, I've said this before, but like without, and this is my own privilege speaking, but like without English subtitles for languages I do not understand, if it's labeled like indigenous speakers, I feel upset. Not like entitled upset, but like, I don't know what's going on, right? It would have been really funny to hear the next couple scenes. And so since I'm mentioning it now, it would have been good to get to know what the joke was. But maybe the joke is that I don't know what the joke was. You know what I mean? But here's what I will also say. Let's go ahead about the next scene is Fight Club. Oops, first rule broken.
I would like to, before we do that, I just note that it's quite possible that the screener that we saw doesn't have those translations, but the release will. So don't feel like you're going to get lost in the movie. Even without the subtitles, it was relatively easy to understand or get the gist of what people were saying when it was in Spanish.
Yeah, no, it's, I now I've watched the movie twice and I don't feel like I enjoy it less because I don't know the Spanish that was spoken. But also I do acknowledge the fact that I've been very privileged with things like Netflix and Hulu who tend to give you an English translation to languages that are not English speaking. You know what I'm saying?
And I think that this scene does a pretty good job of establishing that he doesn't feel like these are his people. Like, this isn't the crowd that he wants to hang out with. Is the more dealers?
Well, he gets a text from someone named Marco saying, you come into this fight. And that's what kind of like gets him up and gets him going because he was falling asleep at it anyways. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we go to the fight club scene.
Okay, so he walks into this, it looks like an abandoned building. And 100% is that, okay, we'll take a show of hands. Is this a party you want to go to?
Yeah.
Is that 2 out of 3?
Yeah, I'm going to have to say no.
There was an air lady.
I know.
She was a, whatever they call them, she's a rope dancer person.
Yeah, she looked very fascinating, but it's just fight, like, it's like if my family was like, we're going to go to a car museum, Lydia. And I'm like, no, I want to go to a fantasy museum. Like if this was, it doesn't look like the fighting scene that we're going into. Like, it's not like it's set up specifically for luchadores or lucha libres, I believe is the correct term. Could be getting that wrong. Feel free to yell at me. But if, I mean, if it was more like that, I would probably find it more enjoyable. This is like, you know, mixed martial arts, hand, like this looks like a WWE wrestling match, or no.
It's like no holds barred in a cage.
Right. It's not like.
It's Mad Max.
MMA.
Yeah.
Mixed martial arts.
Because WWE is like, but even like.
But the fence is so high.
Yeah.
And although the people are pressed against it, which is like in the official kind of arena is not a thing. It does seem to involve fighting that is not necessarily boxing and it's not necessarily martial arts. It's mixed.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Like,
you're going to get kicked in the face. World, you're going to get punched in the face.
Well, it's like, what is the organization that Vince McMahon runs?
WWE.
So that is WWE. Okay. This is how little I know of this area.
Yeah. Vince McMahon is a piece of garbage and we can all fucking hate that guy.
Right. But like, I think the wrestlers on WWE, they have like the storyline that goes with it. And if it was more along that line of like, you know, oh, these are, you know, characters that are playing a part essentially, and they're, you got your heels and you got your good guys, that sort of stuff, I might be more interested in it. But even WWE isn't really something that interests me. So.
What an action-packed adventure we're going to have this month, The Plotter. Thank you for joining us for part one of our review of 2021's Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone. We can't wait to bring you the rest of our full walkthrough of this just-released, on-demand, independent film, as well as an interview with creator, producer, and writer Charlie Clark on July 26th. If you'd like to prepare yourself, why not rent Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone on Google Play or Amazon Prime? We don't get any kind of compensation, we just think you might enjoy our review more after seeing it for yourself. Hey, this is your audio engineer and también en español, su ingeniero de audio, Jen! Are you having a difficult time understanding us because the bleeps just make it so hard to interpret how we're feeling inside? Why not become an official applauder for only $1 per month? You'll get the entire back catalog of episodes unbleeped, as well as help us raise advertising funds, keeping the show ad and sponsor free for everyone. We'll be back next week for part two of our month-long discussion of this quirky, self-aware action comedy. From shocked and applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.